Support comes from listeners like you and from the Juno Artist Gallery, a cooperative featuring the work of over 25 local artists and artisans. The Juno Artist Gallery is open year-round and daily during the summer, located downtown in the Senate Building.
I was toting my pack along the dusty North Slope Hall Road when along came a semi with a high canvas covered load. If you're going to Fairbanks Mag with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, bud, I've traveled every road in this great land. I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man. Across the tundra bare, man, I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man, I've been everywhere. I've been to Barrow, Juneau, North Pole, Metlakatla, Kotzebue, Anchorage, Unalaska, Seoul, Dartmouth, Ketchikan, Koya, Cookstone, River, Sleep, New Petersburg, I did a ride, Lagnuck, Dead Horse, Kenai, Katmai, Cousin, Queen, Cluck, Wamp, Pruda Bay, Dutch Harbor, Wattsila, I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man. Cross the tundra, bear, man, I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel out, have my share, man, I've been everywhere. I've been to Kodiak, Fognak, Chugiak, Knack, Neck, Old Harbor, Isaac, Cape Thorn Bay, Anchorpoint, Heidelberg, Yakutat, Hoover Bay, Nome, Ruby, Chichagar, Franco, Narrows, Cross Point, Squaw Harbor, Moose Pass, Eagle River, Hawk, and a Dead Horse, Dot Lake, Ock Lake, Wanna Lake, I'll be sick. I've been there.
Chuck Thompson with the Cabineers. He's been everywhere in this great land, and that's the theme of a First Friday exhibition coming up, Travel Art, that's going to be happening at the Franklin Street Gallery. And Barbara Craver's with us. Going to be talking to her in just a minute about that fun-sounding gallery happening. Also going to be talking to folks at The Canvas. Chris Taylor and Electra Gardner are going to be here talking about their classes in January. Another First Friday exhibit happening over at The Jack is Samantha Adams, a photographer who uses art as advocacy, and we'll be talking to her. And speaking of The Jack, the Juno Arts and Humanities Council Executive Director, Nancy DeCherney, will be here for Arts Up as we're heading into another busy weekend in the arts here with a First Friday coming up, the first Friday of 2013. We got mostly cloudy skies ahead for the rest of the day with a chance of snow, and then snow tonight with accumulation up to 2 inches and lows right at freezing. Snow likely for tomorrow and snow accumulation less than 1 inch with highs around 35 degrees, so it might be a little mixture of rain with that snow right here down here at the sea level. Chance of rain and snow for Friday night with lows around 31 degrees, and rain and snow for Saturday as well. Highs around 36 degrees for Saturday. Coming up next, we're going to hear from National Native News.
Mr. Feaster out there in the circle. Don't forget about Douglas. People get a little bit upset if you forget about Douglas. Spent a summer out in Seward. Not a bad summer.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Tara Gatewood, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. A Northern Plains healthcare group is beginning a program to improve employees' cultural awareness of the area's Native American populations. The health system is working to hire 2 traditional Native healers to inform healthcare staff of specific needs and cultural concerns of Natives. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Sanford Health is one of the largest health providers in the U.S. The organization owns hospitals and clinics across the Northern Plains, a region that is home to dozens of tribes. As part of a program to expand its efforts for Native populations, Sanford Health is hiring traditional Native healers to teach employees how to respond to particular needs of Native patients. Dr. Reed Salik with Sanford Health in Fargo, North Dakota, says the program covers a lot of information.
We are developing very specific training curriculums on motivational interviewing and on behavioral activation, on trauma-informed care, on cultural mindfulness, and specifically to American Indian populations as well. We also have curriculums on chronic disease management and on health promotion. And essentially, we received a $12 million award from the Center for Medicaid Services to design and develop a new model of care and implement that new model of care through training and workforce development.
Salik says one healer has been hired and one more will join the staff soon. They'll cover Native populations in South and North Dakota along with Northern Minnesota. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
A champion of development opportunities for Native American tribes died last week. David Lester was a member of the Muscogee Creek tribe. He was the first president of the United Indian Development Association in the 1970s. The organization is now the National Center for American Indian Enterprise Development. During his career, Lester also served as commissioner for the Native Americans in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services during the Carter and Reagan administrations. He was most recently the executive director of the Council of Energy Resources. The organization helps tribes plan for long-term energy needs. Lester also served on boards of organizations like Americans for Indian Opportunity and the Institute for American Indian Arts in Santa Fe, New Mexico. He was also a member of the National Coal Council. He is survived by his wife, son, and daughter. After months of negotiations, the tribes on the Wind River Indian Reservation in Wyoming have signed a temporary contract with surrounding Fremont County to continue garbage pickup services. The previous contract expired in December. Wyoming Public Radio's Rebecca Martinez reports.
Fremont County implemented administrative changes and imposed fees at its rural waste transfer sites this summer, but did not have the jurisdiction to make the same changes on tribal land. The Eastern Shoshone and Northern Arapaho tribes, which share the reservation, said they did not want to pay disposal fees to the county, and they were considering taking over operation of the transfer stations if it were financially viable to do so. Fremont County Solid Waste Superintendent Andy Fry says under the temporary contract, the tribes will staff the transfer stations themselves, and the county will waive the disposal fees for enrolled members of the two tribes.
There will be a created revenue stream from these sites, just as at every other district transfer station. There will be limited hours, so that way everybody in the county is operating on a similar structure.
The tribes will have 6 months to negotiate a new contract before the interim waste pickup agreement expires. For National Native News, I'm Rebecca Martinez in Laramie.
During this week in 1943, Richard West was born. West is the founding director of the National Museum of the American Indian. He resigned in 2007 after serving as director for 17 years. West, who was born on January 6th, is a member of the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes of Oklahoma. This is National Native News. I'm Tara Gatewood.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
I'm a traveling man, made a lot of stops all over the world, and in every port I own the heart of at least.
Oh, Ricky Nelson's a traveling man, but traveling women are going to be exhibited at the Franklin Street Gallery coming up. Barbara Craver's with us right now. Barbara, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And tell me a little bit about the inspiration behind this travel art.
Well, at the Franklin Street Gallery, we have put together a traveling art show two or three times. And I was thinking back on it. One of the cool things that are a group that we're also affiliated, all of us are also part of the Plain Rain Painters group.
Mm-hmm.
And we have gone on two international trips, and that inspired a show when we came back from Italy the first time, and then when we came back from Turkey. And one of the things that's kind of cool about the gallery is we have not as thank you for all the people that come in and just look at the art, but we also have people who do art, and they want to come in and they say, "Well, what do you got? How do you do it? How do you take your stuff when you go, you know, when you fly someplace?" And so one of the things that we're showing is the artwork that we've done both on site and after we've come back, and then we're also going to bring in some of our travel setup gear.
Oh, that's
on Friday.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, that's really interesting. So you just the however you get, you know, and every, I'm sure every artist has a different system,
yeah.
Right?
Depends where you're going. If, like, Pua goes out in her boat with her husband to Pelican, so I'm sure she has one setup.
Dry bags are a big part of it. Yeah, right.
And lunch. And then if you're going to Norway, like Constance went, and Constance Baltuck and James Stokes went to Norway and Iceland on two separate trips, you know, the kind of stuff that you can actually bring with you. Is limited.
Yeah. And I would think that that's also, it's going to be very different depending on what medium you work in.
Oh, yeah.
So what are the different things that seem to travel well as far as mediums go?
I think that, well, the easiest is a pencil and paper, sketchbook. And the nice thing about traveling is if you're forced to have a minimum amount of supplies, you stop getting caught up in the fuss of setting up the big picture. You just work with what you have. And it also, unfortunately, forces you to drink a lot of lattes and cappuccinos,
sure.
Sit around in squares and watch
Maybe
Cafe Society.
Maybe a glass
Society.
Of wine. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm just imagining here.
All
yeah,
that stuff. And try not to get it into your watercolor.
Oh, right. Yes.
But that can happen. If that happens, it happens. It's part of the process.
But I've seen travel kits of like pastels or watercolors and things like that before, I guess. But maybe if someone's working in acrylics or something, I think like Constance works in acrylics a lot. So that must be a different thing.
Yeah, I think you have to have a little bit more premeditation if you want to take something like oils or acrylics. Oils in particular, because they take so long to dry.
I would think oils would be really difficult to travel with.
Yeah, but there's stuff. There's these cool little wet canvas carriers, you know, a lot of them are designed for people who, like, are down south and doing art out of their truck, you know, whatever. So if you're going overseas, you really do have to worry about how much you're taking.
Yeah.
So, yeah, oils would be less portable. I'd say the most portable is pen and ink, watercolor, because with the watercolor, you've got a fairly small palette and you just need water and paper and Paul Volkers and Mary Pat Wyatt have done some amazing watercolors, and their setup is in just a little, you know, plastic carrier bag sort of thing. Constance, years and years ago, showed me just a baggie, like a sandwich-sized baggie. If you just get a little thing of, like, postcard-sized watercolor paper and a tiny little palette and a piece of paper and a paintbrush, you're good to go.
Huh.
So you can't let yourself be limited by fear of materials.
Right. You can figure it out.
But you have to have the right stuff, too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no excuse not to buy stuff.
Yeah. Sure. Keep trying out new things. Yeah. Well, let's go artist by artist and tell me sort of what they're, you know, what areas they're showing and what medium they work in, that sort of stuff.
Okay. Well, Jane Stokes has quite a few pieces. From a trip that she took to Iceland and Norway a few years ago, and they're in watercolor. And she has some more recent pieces and she has a piece that I know she took a picture of, at least. Maybe she got started in Turkey because it's called They Put Hats on the Roofs is the name of the piece. And it's of these rooftops in the city in central Turkey. Can't remember it right. Konya. And you know, interesting title.
Yeah.
So she has watercolors, and a couple of hers are very big that she did back home, but they're quite dramatic of the fjords and fishing villages. So that's Jane.
Okay.
Pua has, 7 pieces, and 3 of them are from Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. She's
from Hawaii.
From, yep.
I'm from Hawaii, too.
Are you?
I can't tell, okay?
All right. No, well, you had a certain, attitude about yourself.
I can say
Hawaii. Yeah. Well, that's right. You can say Hawaii.
I can say her name, too. I can say Pua's name.
Yes.
So she has 3 little studies that looks like she did oil on gesso board. So I think she must have taken her oils with her when she was back in Hawaii this last time. And 3 of Hawaii, 2 of Pelican, and you can guess this one is called On Our Way to Pelican, and the other one is called Leaving Pelican.
Okay, there you go.
and then here's 2 more from Taku Harbor. Shelter from the Storm, Taku Harbor, and Morning After the Storm, Taku Harbor. Let's see. So I won't read everything. Christine Crooks has a pastel that she did in the south of France, Ramatuelle, someplace in the south of France. It's a place where a bunch of plain rangers are going to go this fall.
Okay.
Planning. And then she has a couple from Santa Barbara and a couple from Maui. They're all in pastel.
Nice.
Let's see. I have several pieces that I did in San Francisco. I went there for a workshop in April, and the focus was on taking a lot of pictures of people and action on the streets and then going back to the studio and working up small studies in oil. So these are not done on site, but they were actually done in San Francisco. It was to practice this things that this
and
teacher
then,
does.
MK, is this the work she did out of Kotzebue?
No, that actually, stuff or other this stuff? Okay. Is from a trip that she and her family took to France in or Europe this summer. And she has three charcoal pieces, three sketches, and then three oil on canvas pieces that she did sort of here in Juneau, based on those experiences.
Well, that was my next question I was going to ask. There's there's the stuff you do in the field, and sometimes that's meant as the finished work, but sometimes it's meant as a study for what's going to become a finished work, right?
Right. You can do a study just to sort of try out the ideas and the composition. Also, when you're on the site and you're actually looking, you might be able to get a color note or sort of a feel. And actually, I think whether the study is retained or ever used again, spending an hour or two actually staring at something a long time is an experience in and of itself, and you probably will never forget a lot of the things that you went through your mind while you're doing that. So that in and of itself is useful for later work.
And how about the contrast between doing that and watching it live and then the thing that you just talked about, taking a photo of something and then going back? What's going on there?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that you cannot draw except from a photo. You know, fleeting expression on someone's face, or kids in particular, you can't capture them without them. But a lot of artists will take pictures and do sketches to try and just integrate the experience. And then when you go back to the studio, you have your step back. Editing process of images is important. You can look at it a little more objectively. You can say, okay, I'm out of the experience now. When I do this picture, what is it that I really want to convey? Is it the light on this kid's face? And not try and put everything in. Because when you're out there actually drawing or trying to take some, it's overwhelming. There, you want to do everything. You want to put the top of the mountain in.
You want
to put your feet in. And you have to really kind of crop it.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So in the studio, you're able to be a little bit more objective and sort of clarify your purpose, work a little bit more on the design end of it, and but hopefully still have the excitement and your memories.
Well, it's exciting to think about this great space that you guys have as well there in the Baranoff, the Franklin Street Gallery. Mm-hmm. And all of the works or most of the works that are displayed are on sale. So people, if they're interested in them, you can contact you during the first Friday, right? Or contact the...
Well, they have labels right next to them. And the Baranoff at the front desk has a price list.
Okay.
And it's open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., I believe. And all of our sales go through the front desk at the Baranoff. And the five of us who have been running the gallery for the last 2 years are thrilled to have such a beautiful space. I think one of the best things about it is all of the windows. Because I think going into an art gallery can be intimidating, you know, and you're not sure if I come in, does that mean I have to buy something or someone's going to talk to me?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Like going into a showroom or something,
You know, so it's been a fabulous place for us to be able to showcase original Juneau artists.
And is there a wine tasting as part of this Friday?
There is going to be a wine tasting. I'm not sure which distributor does it, but there's a small fee to rent a glass for
$5 when I've done it.
It's great. Fabulous.
Yeah, it's nice. Stand around, have a nice time,
talk
to friends, look
at
the art, talk about it like you know something.
Or talk to the artists.
Yes.
We're all going to be there on Friday, and you can see how big of a little watercolor palette you need, or how small of a watercolor palette.
Right. Well, that's great. So you get to see the what's used in the field, talk to the artists, and see the beautiful artwork that came from the process of them using the tools that you'll also see there. And it's all happening first Friday, starts at around 4:30
to 6:30.
And it's happening at the Franklin Street Gallery, which is there, the bottom floor of the Baranoff, Franklin of the Franklin Street Gallery. They're right on Franklin Street. It's all about travel art. So travel over to Franklin Street and see it. Barbara Craver, thanks so much for coming
in. Thank you very much, Andy.
Really appreciate it. Go check that out.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load.
If you're going to Winnemucca with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texarkana, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Tallapoosa, Glen Rock, Black Rock, Little Rock, Oskaloosa, Tennessee, Tennessee, Chicopee, Spirit Lake, Grand Lake, Devil's Lake, Crater Lake, the Beach Lake. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Louisville, Nashville, Knoxville, Ombabaka, Shepherdville, Jacksonville, Waterville, Costa Rica, Pittsfield, Springfield, Bakersfield, Shreveport, Hackensack, Cadillac, Fond du Lac, Davenport, Idaho, Jellicoe, Argentina, Diamantina, Pasadena, Catalina, Sea, Guatemala. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert.
Any excuse to play Johnny Cash, I'll do it right here on a Juneau afternoon, where it's mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the day with a chance of snow tonight and snow accumulation tonight up to 2 inches with lows right around 32 degrees. Snow's likely for tomorrow, but the highs are going to be in the mid-30s, so I'm guessing a little bit of rain's going to get mixed in. And a chance of rain and snow for tomorrow night with lows around 31 degrees. Joining us next are folks from the Canvas. We've got Chris Taylor here and Electra Gardiner. How are you doing, guys? Thanks for coming in.
Great, thanks.
Doing good. Thanks for having us.
Well, tell me a little bit about what's happening. You guys have classes coming up in January, Chris. What's going on with those?
We have a lot of different classes that are starting up, some of the ones that I just wanted to highlight briefly before we talk about Electra's class that she has coming up.
Yeah.
We have David Woody is going to be teaching a morphology class. So basically it's an anatomy class for artists.
Called morphology?
Morphology,
okay.
Is the term that he told me is its technical term. But basically you're studying anatomy on a topographical sense of what muscle and bone and tendon you can see just below the surface of the skin. So you don't delve real deep past the upper layers of the muscles, but should be a great class. So he'll be doing lectures and slides that he's done of this kind of drawing, and then working from a live model after the lecture. So
cool, sort of that life drawing thing, and just learning how to deal with the human form.
Exactly,
yeah,
exactly.
Cool.
So that should be a cool class. We also have Avril Valise is going to be teaching just a fundamental drawing basics class and focusing on composition. In that class, and that'll be a class that's starting up this Saturday.
Is that one that maybe is more for beginners?
Avril will be starting basically a whole series, 3 classes that kind of link into one another that are foundation-based, so trying to get people, you know, if you haven't drawn in a while and you want to get your skills up to speed, or if you haven't ever drawn before, this would be a good class to jump in on. And that one's starting this Saturday. And
start
then,
with stick figures and
yeah.
work your way up.
Yeah.
That's where I am.
Flip books.
Yeah. That'd be great.
those should be good classes.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
So, yeah.
And then, Electra, tell me about the class you're teaching.
Yeah, I'm going to be teaching 2 classes. The first class in the month of January is for kids. It's a youth zine-making class. And then the second class in the month of February will be an adult zine-making class. Zines are independently produced magazines. They're super popular on the Northwest Coast, and I want to bring them to Juneau, so it should be pretty exciting.
There's been some cool examples of some drum zines that people do for a little while, and then it seems to not, you know, and it'd be great to, I'm really excited about that idea.
Yeah, I think it's a good community for it. We're small enough and yet big enough. If we get them out in coffee shops and stuff, I think we could get a good circulation going. I know a lot of local businesses that would be supportive. But in the class, we're really going to be focusing on some collage, and I'm encouraging students to, you know, bring in poetry that they've never shared with anyone, or you know, bring in fun quotes or old birthday cards, anything that you really want to repurpose into something else, and that can take on a whole new meaning. So
tell me a little bit about how you would define a zine, and how that's sort of different than this, like a regular magazine or flyer or something that you would pick up.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely really similar, except that zines, because you're making them yourself and you're copying them yourself, you really have a lot more liberty of what can be in them. A lot of times, zine culture is a critique of mainstream culture, and that's what really is fun about them. For the zine making for kids class, I just really, you know, I don't think a lot of kids are really listened to, and so I think it's a really cool way for them to use their voice in a new way. In an adult class, yeah, I'm hoping that we can get some edgier stuff out there, some, you know, political critique or, you know, anything that suits your fancy. But
yeah, and then I always think about artwork as being a real key component of what zines do. Something about a graphic novel, something, you know, some sort of hybrid of graphic novel, comic book, political, you know, political cartoons, all that stuff involved, right?
Absolutely. And you can definitely use, you know, inspiration from other people's artwork by doing collage stuff and then incorporating your own. There's, you know, a lot of really fun zines out there that look like they're kind of, you know, another person's work, that are making a play off of some other advertisement that we might be more familiar with and stuff like that. But art's definitely a central part of it, and you can definitely have a zine that's more words and less art, or way more art and less words. And so there's really a creative license there, which is
yeah.
Great.
I think that sometimes that because there's so little structure to what you can do with a zine, it's almost intimidating to think about, well, what would I ever, you know, there's too much freedom almost.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, that's one of the things that we want to work on in the class, is really finding your voice and your vision and trying to, you know, find a zine idea that is in some way cohesive. So at least, you know, each of your, that you can make like one magazine that is, has one message, but you can make many and have many messages too. So that works.
And are you going to take it from idea, thought, creation to distribution?
Well, I think with the kids class, we're really going to focus on making just like one final zine. And then if students do want to take that on and try to distribute it, you know, then I'm willing to help them work on that. For the adult class, I do definitely want to focus more on distribution. And there are bookstores, independent bookstores, you know, specifically on the Northwest Coast that do a lot of zines. So, you know, getting them to PALS in Portland and stuff like that.
Oh, so you're thinking
fun.
Even beyond Juneau, because I was thinking, oh, just, you know, putting them in coffee shops, but you're thinking it could, there's
yeah.
actually an audience out there.
Absolutely. I think there is definitely a national audience, and, you know, with things like Etsy, it makes it really easy to distribute your zines online too, and a lot of fun blogs.
What's
are
Etsy?
Picking
Tell
them
me
up.
What Etsy is.
Etsy is an online, it's like, I guess, I don't know, kind of like eBay except for crafters without an auction, if that makes sense.
Wait a minute. Sounds like anarchy.
Right? Yeah, Etsy is a great online site, and they have a whole zine section. And so that's where I have built up my collection. And during the class, I will be bringing in my collection to show people. I'll bring a different collection for adults than I
cool.
do for children.
Yeah, yeah. other classes coming up in January as well at the campus?
Yeah, we have a couple other classes coming up. We have a new stained glass basics class. So it's, again, similar to the drawing class, but Joel Abbott's going to be teaching that. It's 3 weeks, and it's just going to be really breaking stained glass panel making down to the basic fundamentals, and so people who haven't done it before or, again, want to brush up on their skills, do that. Mm. And then those will build into a couple months from now into a more advanced class. So, and then we also have Angie Lawler is going to be teaching a colored pencil on copper jewelry class. So it's a way of, you know, doing a finish on copper without using chemicals. A lot of the times the chemicals that you get to to make a nice finish on copper can be a little more toxic. Well, this is a way you can do a non-toxic finish. And she had a couple very nice pieces that she had at our instructor show in November. So she'll be doing that. She also has an Etsy site where she shows a lot of her stuff, and we have that on our website if you want to check it out and see what kind of stuff she does.
It's like Canvas. What's the website?
Canvasarts.org.
Okay, yeah. Canvasarts.org. Canvas, such a great resource for Juno, and just always coming up with new ideas and great new ways to kind of teach all different audiences in Juno.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a very fun and creative space, and it was great to bring a lecture in the other day just to check out for the zines class to check out our large gamut of art supplies that they'll get to jump into for the class to make the zines. And yeah, a lot of creativity down there and just a lot of fun. And the instructors that we have right now, I think, are fantastic and very talented and up for sharing their knowledge. So
how can people sign up?
You can sign up through our website, find the class and shoot us an email. We'll get you signed up. And you can also just give us a call down at the Canvas, 586-1750. And we're always there. If you have questions about classes or you're not sure if it's a good fit for you, just give us a call and we can walk you through and find something good for you.
Awesome. January classes happening at the Canvas. Go check it out. Electra and Chris, thanks so much for coming in and letting us know about it.
Thanks so much, Andy.
All right. From the Dave Haskell Group. That's their first CD. Many of you may remember. Longtime Junoites may remember Dave playing with Jim Pepper long time ago at the 20th Century Theater. Back in the 70s, he played with them. Dave Haskell coming back to music and making some great music there with his first CD. It's called Pivot Point. And check it out when you get a chance. Coming up next, we've got Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 3rd of January, 2013. It was on this date, 1521, Martin Luther was excommunicated from the Catholic Church, having criticized the Church for selling indulgences for the forgiveness of sins, for which he could find no authority in Scripture. The Church accused Luther of heresy and gave him 60 days to recant. Luther replied by throwing the Pope's letter on a bonfire, so the Pope excommunicated him, 1521, on this date. It was on this date, 1777, George Washington and his army won the Battle of Princeton, sneaking up behind Cornwallis's army over frozen ground, fooling Cornwallis and his scouts by lighting campfires so that he thought that most of the colonials were on one side and the rest of the army came around from the other. The British retreated from New Jersey, which raised the morale of the Continental Army, and they began to believe that they could actually win this war. Today's the birthday of Father Damien, born Joseph de Wooster in Tremelo, Belgium, 1840, who served the leper colony on the Hawaiian island of Molokai. At a time when victims were dumped off the boat in the shallows because people did not want to make any contact with lepers, Father Damien lived among them, he ate with them, he buried them when they died, and he developed the illness himself and died on the island. Father Damien said, "I would not be cured if the price of the cure was that I must leave the island and give up my work. I am perfectly resigned to my lot. Do not feel sorry for me. And today is the birthday of J.R.R. Tolkien, born in Bloemfontein, South Africa, 1892. Studied classics and language and literature at Oxford, and in 1925 he returned to Oxford as a professor. One day, grading exams, he discovered that a student had left one whole page in his examination booklet blank, and Tolkien, for reasons unknown even to him, wrote on the page, "In a hole in the ground, there lived a hobbit," a line that turned into a bedtime story that he told his children, and from that came his book, The Hobbit, in 1937. Here's a poem for today by Linda Paston, entitled Flowers. The deep strangeness of flowers in winter, the orange of clivia or this creamy white rose in its stoneware vase, while outside another white like petals drifting down. Is it real? A visitor asks, meaning the odd magenta orchid on our sill, unnatural as makeup on a child. It's freezing all around us, salt cold on the lips, the flinty blacks and grays of January in any northern city, and flowers everywhere in the supermarket by cans of juice filling the heated stalls near the river, secular lilies engorged with scent, notched tulips, crimson and pink, ablaze in the icy corridors of winter. Linda Paston's poem, Flowers, from her collection, Traveling Light, published by Norton and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from the Copper Whale Inn, located in downtown Anchorage, near the city's restaurants, galleries, museums, and business district. Copper Whale Inn, located in downtown Anchorage. More information at copperwhale.com.
That's Photograph, Ringo Starr. Many people think Harry Nilsson helped out writing that song. But speaking of photographs, Samantha Adams, photographer, is with us right now. Samantha, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Andy.
Yeah, absolutely. And Samantha, you've got a First Friday, starting on First Friday, exhibit in The Jack, which is a really interesting work where you're sort of, in a way, in your words, using art as advocacy in a way.
Certainly. The exhibit is titled An Alaskan Childhood, and a lot of the images are of children at play, really doing what it is their true profession. And it
yes, they do what they know, yes.
And what I've done is I've taken those images and paired them with quotes that I felt would best illustrate the message that I hope to convey about what we can do as a community for our children. So I brought a single quote here that I could read to you if that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
But I think it'll give a good
idea. So just to get a visual of this, though, you have a number of photographs of children playing, or even close-ups of their face, or things like that.
There's only one that's an actual face, and when I do macro photography, I don't edit that photography. Mm-hmm. I just present it as it was taken to preserve the detail, obviously. But when I have done photography of children, the intention there is to kind of capture the essence of childhood, not any one particular child. So in a lot of the photographs, you can't really tell who the child is. I just wanted to capture that essence.
Just the movement, the sort of joyousness of being a child, those kinds of ideas.
Very much so.
Right. Yeah. And so along with a picture of that, there's a quote such as this one that you're about to read.
Yeah. This one is, "Above all, we need, particularly as children, the reassuring presence of a visible community, an intimate group that enfolds us with understanding and love, and that becomes an object of our spontaneous loyalty as a criterion and point of reference for the rest of the human race." And that's Lewis Mumford.
So talk to me through why you chose the quotes you chose.
Unfortunately, I can't share with you the images, but when you see, you'll just have to go to the show.
So there was something about the image. You kind of started with the images?
I started with the images, and I kind of worked outward from there.
This is that question when you ask a musician, do you write your words first or do you write your music first? And that's sort of...
I think it undermines the purpose of taking a photograph if you have a quote in mind ahead of time. If you're trying to illustrate a quote versus quoting off of a picture, I think some of it is lost in translation there, your real intention.
You might get a little too literal or you might something.
Well, and a lot of photography, particularly with children, is images that are very serendipitous. You come upon these things as they're just playing, and none of that's planned or scripted. And so if you have a quote in mind that you're hoping to capture in an image, it really becomes more of a, your intention than anything.
Right.
So
you don't want to sit there photographing going, oh, shoot, I missed it,
yeah,
in a way,
you know,
right?
Yeah. Because then you miss what the really important parts are.
Right.
If you're honed in on that, so...
Yeah. Did you have sort of have you been kind of researching that in a way, kind of trying to remember good quotes, trying to pick up on them, or as just part of this project, you said, okay, I'm going to do this project. I've got this series of photos now with this one. I really need
you
to
know,
find something.
I've always been a bit of a quote buff, if you will. Mm-hmm. I'm a writer by profession. And so anytime I see something in written word, I always make note of it or flag it, you know, I have a stack of dog-eared books where I've read something that struck a chord with me. So I do have kind of a stockpile of quotes. And it was kind of fortunate the way a lot of the quotes I had already familiarized myself with were things that were very fitting for the images that I had shot. So,
tell me about your process as a photographer, just the basics, black and white, color, or, you know, what's the look?
It depends on the subject matter. Oftentimes with children, I like to, initially this exhibit was going to be titled Childhood in Living Color and Larger Than Life, and I was going to have everything in just blazing color because that's what children are. They're just there, very bright, and I actually changed it around a little bit because I realized... one of the things that interests me, and it always has as a teacher, is the way that geography shapes a child's play. And so that's where the Alaskan childhood came from, because in a lot of these images, you're seeing things that are unique to Alaskan children. And I actually got thinking about this a few years back when I owned my own preschool and child care, and I had some boys out in my backyard on this big climbing structure, and they were using a 5-gallon Home Depot bucket to drop crab pots. That's what they were pretending to do. And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, having moved up here from Montana, that's not something you'd see in a field full of horses in Montana.
Right.
And so I really wanted to stay true to what Alaskan children engage in, what they play like, because I do think that that's shaped by the geography of childhood. And anyhow...
That's interesting, and the idea that I mean, it's a fascinating idea, and illustrated by that example. But is there a broader concept you're trying to get to there, where Alaska, the Alaska childhood experience is different in some way than the you know, than the Montana childhood experience as a
I
result?
I would certainly say there are some unique aspects to living in either location. I know that when we moved up here in 2006, we had two young, you know, little bitty boys at the time, and now they're, you know, 9 and 7. But oftentimes we'll be out beach combing or, you know, flipping over rocks looking for eels and or seeing humpback whales out, you know, yeah. on a Sunday trip out the road. And those aren't things you're going to see in Montana. And so that is, it's really, for children, their play is how they learn the best. And so it's really place-based learning for them. They're learning about their environment. And I think that geography does shape how children learn.
What's the format as far as just size goes? When people walk into the Jack, are they going to be seeing, as you said, it was originally going to be larger than life.
Larger than life. So I had like 24 by 36, you know, poster prints in mind. And actually, I did retain some of those for this exhibit. I've got a few that are the 24 by 36. I've got some 16 by 20 canvases and some 18 by 24 as well. I also have a nice little 8x10 of myself as a child, of course.
Oh, very nice. That's good.
Yeah, so it kind of runs the.
Yeah, and I'm wondering about the authors of the quotes. Do you have favorites there or?
You know, let me see here if I have some of the. I don't actually just that one, but.
And I guess the other question I had there was is there some poetry involved or is it mostly prose or how is that? Is it just quotes?
A combination of both. We've got some quotes in there. There is a nice little poetic piece by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. If I chose that quote, and I do believe I did, for the particular piece. So, yes, there's a little bit of everything in there.
And that's interesting. What you're saying there is interesting to me. It means that you have a piece and you maybe had multiple quotations for each or you might have had multiple quotations for each photograph and you had to go through a process of deciding which one was really going to be it. And
I really wanted to, and that did happen with quite a few of the photos. However, there were photos that I had, and I immediately thought, well, that's the quote I want to use. And I referred back to, like I was saying before, the quote stockpile that I have. But there were a couple of times, there's one in particular of my grandfather, who is in his mid-80s. He came here and visited this summer. And he's kind of in the foreground on the right-hand side of the picture. And then there are a group of the children in my program. We were all out at the beach for the day. And it was not in any way set up like this, but the kids are off splashing in the water, and he's walking along the beach kind of with his head down, and there's a raven flying right over the top of him. And I was trying to figure out how to say without overstating it that really what you were seeing there was kind of this cycle, that you start out here and you end up here, and that's kind of man's fate. And I wanted to figure out how to succinctly say that, because I found a lot of different poems, but brevity being fairly important to what I was wanting to do, ruled out some of the longer ones. So,
yeah, interesting. So you've got it's been fascinating to talk about the work. Now, are you trying to accomplish something? Are you hoping that something comes of this?
You know, anytime you say that you are an advocate, yeah, you want to see an outcome. And what that looks like at this point, I don't know. What I do know is that having done a little bit of advocacy work prior to this on behalf of children, is that in the long term, we have things like an increased high school graduation rate. And I know that that might not seem related to what I'm talking about here, but what I think sometimes we, as a nation, you know, just as a, I don't want to generalize and say that everybody feels this way or this is resulted because of the way that we want things accomplished now, but with children in particular, the willingness or the ability to invest is based on a return of investment, or return on your investment. And with children, this isn't a year from now. This isn't 2 years from now. You don't see that return on investment. You see it 10 or 15 years down the road. And that wait, I think, is sometimes too long. But when you look at how do we fix the high school dropout rate for freshmen, sophomores, juniors, and seniors in high school, it doesn't happen once they're in high school. It happens when they're 4, 5, 6, and 7 years old, and you hook them on something that they are so excited to learn about that you never lose them. You never lose them down the road. And so, you know, picking the quotes and picking out the pieces and tying those together, that's the big picture there, is how we can do right by our children. And
for the long haul.
For the long haul. Yeah. And it's, I think sometimes when you're advocating for children, what often, it's often summed up by saying that children are a family's business. That's a family's business. But in reality, every child that's raised within this community is, what I've known since I've moved here in 06 is that a lot of people either come back to the community or never leave. They're just raised here generation after generation, and that's really awesome. So what you've guaranteed yourself is that these kids are going to be here in some capacity, and they can be our firefighters and our doctors and our nurses and our school teachers, or they can take up space at Lemon Creek, which studies have shown that costs more money to house a bunch of prisoners than it does to educate preschoolers. So...
Yeah.
That's the reality.
Yeah, and so it's a fascinating idea to sort of just bring forward to folks the through showing the joy of childhood and then some carefully chosen quotes, kind of tying that responsibility we all have to making sure that we take care of these of our kids as they grow throughout their life.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, Samantha Adams, thanks so much. Samantha Adams is a photographer. Art as advocacy is kind of what she's advocating here right now. And she's got a First Friday exhibit coming up tomorrow. It's at the Jack, 4:30. Is that when it starts?
4:30.
And some photographs with quotes and thought-provoking stuff and some great work. So thanks so much, Samantha, for coming in.
Yeah, and there
appreciate
will also
it.
Be some Legos and some other
kid-friendly, definitely.
Well,
yes.
And not so much geared towards just the children, but I also wanted the adult's mindset to be that of a child, to kind of step back and say, I was a kid once too, because
right.
I think as adults we lose a little bit of that. And as long as we're in touch with that, I think that enables us to look at it in a way that enables us to advocate and invest on their behalf.
Great. So, thanks. Good luck tomorrow.
It. Awesome.
All
thank
right.
you so much.
Thank you, Samantha. Back to Juno Afternoon, where Nancy DeCherney from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council has joined us.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Nancy. Happy New Year to you.
Yes.
I don't know. 2013. Where's our jetpacks?
I don't know. I thought we were supposed to have those.
We were supposed to have jetpacks.
Well, let me give you some tinfoil.
Yeah, well, hey, we've got a big, this is a big Friday for January. It's a first Friday, so lots of stuff going on.
So it's kind of mild-mannered, but it is a lot of interesting things.
Well, people are exhaling a little bit after December. Goodness.
It was intense.
Yes.
But, yes, we do have, as you we were just talking with Samantha, she'll be over there at our place getting things going. And at the same sort of simultaneously or right after the opening, we have the Juno Lyric Opera's Midwinter Vocal Festival.
Oh.
We'll be performing over there at 7:30.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's going to be lovely. I've been listening to them rehearse. So, let's see. The Alaska State Museum will not be open, so don't go there. But the exhibits that are there are going to close on the 12th. I believe the photography exhibit closes on Saturday.
Okay.
So if you haven't been to see that, do try to get over there. Yeah, as you mentioned, we've got Alaska Robotics has student comics, all sorts of different. We'll see.
Yes, it's art inspired kind of by comics, and as Pat was telling us yesterday here, but all by students going up through 12th grade, and he's really excited. He says there's some great work.
I think I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
Kiton's going to be open also. It's just across the street from Alaska Robotics. Fairweather Prints says they'll be open. You've talked about the Franklin Street Gallery, which sounds like a very interesting show.
It's going to be really fun. I love the idea of not just seeing the work, but also seeing the tools of the trade.
Yeah.
And seeing the whole, how they pack
how
up
you
their
do
stuff.
It.
I want to see like how Christine does it.
Yes.
Because I'll bet she's super organized about it. Got it all.
I bet
thought
she
out.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be fun if she wasn't.
No, right? That'd be great. I'm just a mess.
Yeah, just
awesome.
A mess. I'll throw it all into this bag.
It would make me feel so good about myself.
Okay, then. So let's see. Sarah O'Connor's down at the South Franklin Street Heritage.
Oh, okay.
And so
Sarah Conero.
Now, I was
that's
wondering
Sarah
if that's
Conero.
Okay. They called me and they said, it's Sarah O'Connor. And I'm looking all over the place for Sarah O'Connor. Okay, Sarah Conero.
I got a Facebook invite from her.
Okay,
we're busting her here on live radio.
Okay, okay.
But she's done some work and also has done some work with Matt Davidson. So
yeah.
Matt works in wood. And then she adds her, either paint or mixed media stuff to that. And I'm pretty sure that's what's
the glitter
up.
Glitter scale.
Yeah,
she's
in
there.
both heritages I've
okay.
heard on both
right.
in both the Second Street and Main Heritage. Yes.
Well, okay. You know more than I
well,
in this
no.
situation.
No.
Yes. I actually called to get the information and got interesting
well,
information.
Maybe she wants to be known as Sarah O'Connor.
Let's try it.
Okay.
Oh, St. Patrick's Day is coming. Hey. Okay then. At the Juno Artist Gallery, which is a co-op, and if you're interested in learning more about that or becoming a part of it, this is the month. Go down there. You can meet the artists and talk to them about what's involved and maybe become part of the co-op down there. The Juno Douglas City Museum, or the CM, as we've decided.
The CM, yes.
CM. You can see Rob Roy's at the CM.
I'm excited about this one.
Yeah.
Rob's got a lot of really great new stuff. It's a solo exhibit.
Called
very
Reverie.
Cool.
Should be very nice.
Yep.
The back, Silver Bow Back Room has Adrienne Honerbrink as a mixed media stuff. There'll be sculpture and paintings and all sorts of odd things there. So stop in there. The Rookery has Jim Fowler. He's had his stuff up there last month. They'll continue that. And the Canvas has mixed media by the artists at the Canvas. And the Whale Project has a silk piece by Candy Barons that's just gorgeous. They have one of the whale's tails in there and a bunch of other stuff. So
no,
it's in the Wastman Building.
In the Wastman Building. Okay,
yeah,
that's what I was going to ask.
230. It's across the street from the Canvas. So when you're out walking around, you can stop in and see that.
Nice.
There's a couple of other interesting things. Let's see, Friday, tomorrow morning from 10 until 2, Eagle Crest Ski Area is having Mountain Savvy workshops for kids ages 12 to 14. About avalanches and
very
being
cool.
smart. Yeah,
very
it's
good.
A good idea. $20, you can call them and get registered for that. Sea Alaska is doing a workshop all this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Carmelita Estrada is having a workshop on moccasin making. And if you're interested in that, you should pre-register at 586-9280. The cost is $50. It includes all the stuff that you'll end up with a pair of moccasins.
Wow.
Out of the deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, such a deal. So
can't afford not to sign up. You make money.
I don't know about that,
but you learn
quite a bit.
Yes,
that's for sure.
Right.
Goldtown Nickelodeon is showing Chasing Ice again. This is a movie that sounds very fascinating. It'll be 4 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 9 p.m. through the weekend. And Rockwell has got Django again.
Oh, very good. Okay.
The original Django.
The original, the inspiration to Django Unchained, the new Tarantino movie.
Right. And as I mentioned, at 7:30, there's the Midwinter Vocal Festival at the Jack. And at 9:30, sit in with the band down at the Rendezvous.
And on Saturday, I want to mention there's a really cool thing happening at the Rookery, which is George Kuhar is playing at there. Now, he does this every year. It's kind of around his birthday. So I think as a self-birthday thing, he sort of throws a little party and sings some songs and plays amazingly cool music.
And what time is that?
I think it's at 7. I think it starts at 7. I'm not positive. It might start at 8. Not sure. But, you know, check in with the Rookery tomorrow anytime and ask him when the George Kuhar concert is. And it's but it's definitely happening on Saturday.
And this
just in from Jeff Brown.
The moccasin class is filled. So next time, pay attention. But I think it's wonderful to know that these opportunities are out there. So we will be tuned in for that. On Saturday in the morning, it's that Saturday thing that they do over at JEDC. At 1 o'clock, the Cycle Alaska folks are having a bike clinic. And I didn't find out what the topic was, but if you're into biking and maybe your bicycle needs a little help, give them a call. Go down. They're down there by the bridge. The big red building. You can't miss it.
If you wanted to, you couldn't.
You couldn't miss it.
No.
And speaking of things that go on at Rockwell, at 11 in the morning on Sunday is the ukulele jam. They've been doing this every couple Sundays.
Which is predictive of a really exciting thing happening.
Which is happening.
Right after Wearable Arts Weekend on February 11th, Jake Shimbakuru.
Shimbakuru
is coming. I can't pronounce his last name, but I love his music, and I play it on KXLL a lot. He does. He's the best ukulele artist in the world, kind of
you
like bar none.
Bar none.
Yeah.
It's wonderful music. And you can get your tickets for that now, and I would suggest doing that.
And speaking of wearable arts, we should mention that the artist deadline is coming up on January 7th.
Mm-hmm. And you should get your stuff in for that right away. Also, you know, if you wanted to go to the show on Saturday, I would suggest that you be wandering in to get your tickets very soon. And you need to be a member to do that. Thanks to all the members who have already come in and gotten their tickets because...
They're going fast.
They're going fast.
Yep.
Okay. And let's see. Back to school. Kids are going back to school on Monday.
Holy
cow. Man.
Wow.
Okay, then. And by the way, we're getting new electricity over at the Jack. So the main hall is not available to rent.
You're
for
not
going to
run
weeks.
The cord from over here at K2 anymore across the street?
The little squirrels running in the cages.
That's exciting. New electricity over there. Yeah. Won't blow as many fuses.
Right. We can have two crock pots going at the same time. It's going to be
really
fun.
Up the ante.
But we will still have the gallery open and the offices. So you can come by. On Tuesday, we're going to have a little small press conference over there about some news that's happening at the Jack. If you're interested in that, stay tuned. Wednesday, there is, the Canvas has a whole lot of really interesting classes.
We've just talked about that. We don't even have to go over it because Chris Taylor was just over here with Electra Gardnier, who's teaching one of the classes, and we talked about
zines.
All the classes.
Did
about
you talk
zines.
About morphology?
We talked about the zines and morphology.
Talked
about it all. And we've only got 10 seconds left.
Okay,
so
Happy New Year, and it's just come by the Jack and get your little guide.
And that's Nancy Cherney. That's Arts Up, and that's a Juno Afternoon for today. Thanks for watching and listening.
Watching.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear.